On a small soundstage in Studio City, a new sitcom called Will and Grace is being taped.
Okay, you nasty, bitter, lonely, balding man. I don't need this crap from you, Will. You know what? I just don't need it.
What time tomorrow?
8-ish, fine.
Suddenly, my world has changed.
For all intents and purposes, I thought I was going to launch into a career of Christian music and win souls to Jesus Christ. Hallelujah.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australia's capital acts on civil unions, a graceful farewell to the show that had the will, and an Exodus refugee sings out. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 13th, 2006. The Legislative Assembly of the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT, which encompasses the country's capital city of Canberra, approved civil unions legislation for same-gender couples this week. The Australian federal government doesn't recognize gay and lesbian unions legally contracted in its states, territories, or in other countries. In fact, revision last year to the nation's Marriage Act, pushed by Prime Minister John Howard's administration, specifically prohibits that. A spokesperson for Australia Attorney General Philip Ruddock, who had vowed to overturn the ACT measure if it conflicted with federal law, told the Associated Foreign Press that his government was happy with amendments to the legislation as originally proposed. The main issue was not requiring registered federal marriage celebrants to officiate at civil union ceremonies, although the spokesperson said Ruddock would still be checking all aspects of the law. A civil unions law passed in Tasmania in 2003 also allows a range of non-married-like or caring relationships to be registered, but the ACT legislation is only available to same-gender couples. It also obliges them to have an official ceremony, while the Tasmanian law doesn't require one. The legislation in both Tasmania and now the ACT allows a gay or lesbian couple to officially register their relationship, thereby gaining virtually all the rights under local laws given to heterosexually married couples, such as access to wills, powers of attorney, and medical consultation. ACT leader John Stanhope, who spearheaded the legislation, said the law as amended will still deliver recognition without conflicting with or changing the meaning of marriage. Peter Furness of the advocacy group Australian Marriage Equality called the move a very significant step forward in our push toward full legal equality under Australian law.
The incoming centre-left Italian government of Romano Prodi will likely be proposing some form of legal recognition for same-gender couples there. But Pope Benedict XVI continues to condemn gays and lesbians, renewing his relentless attacks this week at a conference on marriage and the family. He's quoted as saying, "Only the rock of total and irrevocable love between a man and a woman is capable of being the foundation of building a society that becomes a home for all mankind. There is a special urgency today to avoid confusion with other types of unions based on a weak love." Franco Guilini, a newly elected openly gay leftist MP, charged the Pope with trying to meddle in secular politics and of ignoring the rights of millions of Italians who live together. Vladimir Luxuria, a member of Prodi's coalition who was elected to Parliament as Europe's first transsexual lawmaker, condemned the Pope for suggesting that homosexual love was weaker than heterosexual love, saying it was the duty of the state to recognize and regulate same-gender unions. In his remarks, the Pope also reasserted the Roman Catholic Church's position against any form of birth control. However, retired Milan Cardinal Carlo Maria Martini, a one-time papal contender, made headlines in late April with comments published in the Italian newsweekly L'Espresso saying that condoms were the lesser evil in combating the spread of AIDS. A few days later, Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan, who's in charge of the Vatican's healthcare ministry, told the Rome daily La Repubblica that soon the Vatican will issue a document about the use of condoms by persons who have grave diseases, starting with AIDS.
In U.S. couples news, a New Hampshire Superior Court judge ruled last week that the state must offer domestic partnership benefits to lesbian and gay government workers. The ruling was the result of two separate complaints filed with the state's Human Rights Commission in 2002 by Patricia Bedford and Anne Breen. They both work for the state's technical college, and each is raising a child with a lesbian partner. Merrimack County Judge Kathleen McGuire dismissed the state's argument that denying them partnership benefits was not discriminatory because those benefits are also denied to unmarried heterosexuals. Noting that in New Hampshire, only heterosexuals can marry, McGuire wrote, "The state's attempt to couch the issue as one wherein all unmarried individuals are impacted equally avoids reality." New Hampshire Attorney General Kelly Ayotte plans an appeal to the state Supreme Court. Governor John Lynch says he supports giving benefits to gay and lesbian families, but that he won't interfere with the appeal.
Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich has issued an executive order extending domestic partnership benefits to state employees. Illinois becomes the nation's 13th state and the third largest to offer domestic partnership benefits to many of its state workers. Some state employees had already gained access to domestic partnership benefits under recently negotiated union contracts.
A U.S. federal appeals court has decided that it's at the state level that lawmakers and judges must grapple with the issue of marriage equality for gays and lesbians. A three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals last week told a Southern California couple who'd challenged both state and federal laws limiting marriage to heterosexual couples that they'll have to await the outcome of state litigation already in progress. Those cases could reach the California Supreme Court by year's end. "It is difficult," Judge Ferdinand Fernandez wrote, "to imagine an area more fraught with sensitive social policy considerations in which federal courts should not involve themselves if there is an alternative."
Colorado voters could find many alternatives on their ballot in November. A proposal to create a statewide domestic partner registry with many of the rights of marriage, conceived by the state legislature as a public referendum, cleared its last hurdle this week in the Colorado House of Representatives. But the measure could have a lot of company on the ballot. It's prompted two anti-queer groups to collect signatures for ballot initiatives, one to add an amendment to the state constitution defining marriage as hetero only, and another that would bar legal recognition of any union deemed similar to marriage. Lesbian gay rights advocates then filed their own last-minute initiative to counter the latter proposal, one that would specifically define domestic partnership as not similar to marriage. There's a low threshold in Colorado for the number of signatures required to qualify ballot initiatives, so in theory, all four proposals could be on the ballot, and all four could win voter approval. It's likely that Colorado courts would eventually have to interpret the results. Sean Duffy of the queer advocacy group Coloradans for Fairness and Equality called the current situation clear as mud.
In Canada, the Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission this week awarded Halifax West High School physical education teacher Lindsay Willow $27,000 in damages almost 6 years after two of her colleagues accused her of inappropriate sexual behavior with a 17-year-old female student. Even though the student said nothing of the sort had happened, the school principal nevertheless felt compelled to call in the police. Their investigation determined that there had been no wrongdoing. Willow's complaint with the Human Rights Board charged that she was accused of inappropriate behavior because she was believed to be a lesbian and that the allegations ruined her health, tarnished her reputation, and damaged her career prospects. The Board of Inquiry found that the Halifax Regional School Board, a former teacher, and the then principal discriminated against Willow because of her perceived sexual orientation. In addition to the $27,000 awarded to Willow, the board also awarded damages of $2,500 to the student involved in the allegations.
The California Senate approved a bill this week requiring inclusion in public school social science curricula of the contributions of LGBT people. If it clears the assembly and is approved by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, far from assured, the measure could have a significant national impact because California is one of the country's largest customers of school textbooks. Openly lesbian Democratic State Senator Sheila Kuehl authored the bill, which requires the teaching of age-appropriate information about the historical contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Republican Senator Bill Morrow, however, called the measure dangerous, shockingly claiming to the Sacramento Bee newspaper that there is not one scintilla of credible scientific evidence to suggest that homosexuality is biological in origin. But Democratic Senator Richard Alarcon said the revised curriculum would allow the state to teach tolerance. As he told the Bee, let's give the next generation a chance to do better than we did.
And finally, a lesson in perseverance and what bad publicity can do concluded this week for some young queer activists in the Northern California city of Los Altos, according to a story in the San Jose Mercury News. The issue was a pride parade scheduled for June 4th by the city's teens. The council has even dithered over whether to support requests by the Los Altos High School Gay-Straight Alliance for Gay Pride Day resolutions. This year, it even approved an ostrich-like motion to ban further discussion of any resolutions involving sexual orientation. The proposed teen pride parade downtown, featuring floats, bands, and other local LGBT youth groups, has been strenuously opposed by the council for the past 2 years. The ongoing controversy has ignited months of publicity, mostly negative, and reaching far beyond the city limits. In an apparent about-face, the Los Altos City Council this week unanimously approved a permit for the Teen Pride Parade.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending May 13th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Greg Gordon. You'll meet a talented gay singer-songwriter whose exodus from Exodus led to a new career path in the promised land of pride. Later in the program. Its first episode aired on September 21st, 1998, early in the post-Ellen era of American television. Queer characters were still a rarity, and NBC's introduction of a gay character in the title role of a sitcom was considered a bold move. But from the very start, Will and Grace had smash hit written all over it, a fact that was clear to our Steve Pride when he visited the set of the show shortly after its maiden broadcast.
Looser. Found. Oh. Blah, blah, blah. He goes to the chair.
On a small soundstage in Studio City, a new sitcom called Will and Grace is being taped. By now, you've probably already heard about it or even seen an episode. So what's the big deal? It's just another NBC sitcom on Monday night, right? Yes and no. In the lesbian and gay community, its debut has been eagerly anticipated as it brings the first post-Ellen sign of gay life on the small screen. It's also a slick, sophisticated comedy about the gay-straight dynamic. Will is gay, Grace is straight, and Will's friend Jack is very gay.
Hey, Rumi.
Jack, you can't move in tonight.
What?
Grace is very upset. I told her she could stay here tonight. You move in tomorrow.
Okay, that's interesting. You'd think maybe you could have told me this, oh, I don't know, before I packed up my entire life.
You don't understand. Grace has had a really... What's in the hat box? Your tiara?
Look, Guapo, he made a funny. Shut up, Will. I just slept all the way over here from the east side, and you know how much Guapo hates riding a taxi.
Okay, take it easy, Jack. Sound just like your mother.
Crossing the line. Okay, you nasty, bitter, lonely, balding man. I don't need this crap from you, Will. You know what? I just don't need it.
What time tomorrow?
8-ish. Fine.
Jack is played by actor Sean P. Hayes, and this season he has the distinction of being one of the few openly gay actors playing an openly gay character in a sitcom. But he makes it clear this doesn't make him the new Ellen.
I'm not Ellen because I don't have breasts, but Ellen is one of the funniest people I've ever seen in my life. She makes me pee in my pants, but as her show and our show is a little different, she tried to educate, I think. This show does not try to educate at all. It's purely to entertain. It's not shticky. It's a totally different sitcom. I think the gay issue of the sitcom is not even addressed unless it's brought up. So every episode is not about being gay. If it's brought up, then we acknowledge it, but it's definitely not shoving anything down anybody's throat.
Recently, I met with the creators and executive producers of Will and Grace, David Cohen, who's straight, and Max Munchnik, who's gay. They've been friends since high school and also produced Boston Common and were writers for The Dennis Miller Show, Hearts of Fire, and Dream On. Cohen told me a bit about the premise of Will and Grace.
It originally started, I guess, with the question that was raised. Can a man and a woman ever really just be friends without sex getting in the way? What's the nature of platonic love now, and is it achievable and is it attainable? And it seems to me that this is the kind of relationship between a gay man and a straight woman where that's most pervasive, you know, where that is possible.
I ask if casting a straight actor, Eric McCormick, in the role of Will makes a difference in the public's acceptance of a gay lead character.
I don't know. I really don't know. All I can say is it had absolutely nothing to do with the choice. I mean, it never does. I mean, you realize when you go through the casting process that your goal is simply to find the best person for the role, and that it would be a luxury to say, hey, we need an actor who should be straight, or you know, we need a gay actor to play a gay part or a straight actor. It's like you don't have that luxury. There's usually one, maybe two people you think of who could do the part.
But if it helps, I mean, because as businessmen, obviously, our goal is to get as many people as possible interested in this entertainment program. And if it helps people out there to buy into the show,
Great. That's just a fortunate byproduct.
Yeah. A great deal of the show's humor comes from the relationship between Will and his flamboyant friend Jack. And some early media reports were critical of the over-the-top portrayal of a gay man.
I think that the character of Jack is a gay character that possibly people are more familiar with. And now, all of a sudden, that's being called a stereotype, when in fact, if you really look inside this character, which is just actually watching the show, he's not a stereotype in that
he's not a stereotype in that there are a lot of people we know who are a lot like Jack. I think it's actually very sort of reflexive, kind of a knee-jerk response by a critic to say that. It's simplistic. Here's a guy who occasionally, you know, who if he sings occasionally, or once actually, I think, sings a show tune or twice, and therefore he's a stereotype. Well, a lot of guys we know do that.
Will and Grace's director is James Burroughs, and he was quoted in The Advocate as saying that Sean Hayes' Jack could be the next Kramer or Urkel. I ask Munchnik and Cohen, is America ready for a gay Urkel?
I don't know. That actually is a very frightening image, isn't it?
I don't think a gay guy would ever wear his pants up that high.
Munchnik and Cohen say their gay lead character, Will Truman, won't find romance right away, but he won't end up a pseudo-queer like Matt on Melrose Place. For Pride on Screen, this is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
That was a look back at Will and Grace, soon after its birth in late September 1998. The groundbreaking show's final episode airs this week, but thanks to its successful 8-year primetime TV run, Will and Grace will live on for many more years in syndication heaven.
This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. For those of us who are already out, stay tuned for the next program.
Please visit thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org.
Something that I never said, a story that I've never shared. I was only 20 years old. He was a love affair.
Levi Christ is one of the ones who made it out of so-called reparative therapy into a life of self-acceptance and empowerment. So One of the Ones is a fitting title for his latest CD, an intimate collection of songs illustrating the intricacies of human relationships. This Way Out's Steve Pride had the chance to chat with the now-out singer-songwriter about his life and music.
My name is Levi Kreis. I'm from East Tennessee, originally. Spent the last 7 years in Los Angeles pursuing a career in singer-songwriting.
Singer-songwriter Levi Kreis was in the national tour of Rent, played Matthew McConaughey's younger brother in the film Frailty, has a hot album, and was featured in an episode of The Apprentice last season. But for this rising gay icon, it was a long road to self-acceptance.
I grew up in a little small town called Oliver Springs, where there was a graduating class of 5 people. I was valedictorian with a C average. It was a really small town. My family was very active in the church. They were fundamental Baptist in my house. Dancing was a sin. It was very rigid. We weren't allowed to listen to anything but Christian music. Of course, country music kind of leaked in there, as it would, being from East Tennessee. But I was actually a very sincere boy, you know. By the time I was 12 years old, I was traveling to a different church every weekend and preaching and singing and playing the piano. And for all intents and purposes, I thought I was going to launch into a career of Christian music and win souls to Jesus Christ. Hallelujah. And by the time I was in junior high school, my fundamental Baptist upbringing prompted me to become members of Exodus International, which is a conversion Christian counseling group where they convert you from homosexuality and make good heterosexual men of you.
Just an ordinary man thrown into the life I didn't plan. Suddenly my world has changed. I'm unprepared to make my way.
I was in there for 6 years, and it was the entire time behind my parents' back. They had no idea that I was doing that, but it was such an important thing for me, as I felt like such an abomination to God at the same time. And the way I saw it then, if that was a part of me, then there was just no way that God could use me or accept me or love me. It wasn't until my first year of college that I began to kind of think for myself and begin to define my own religious beliefs through my own questions, building it brick by brick. What is my foundation for life now? I still respect my family's fundamental Baptist upbringing. You know, we don't seem to really have any sort of butting of heads in that regard. And at the same time, though, it's just brought me to a place now where there's such a peace about pursuing music now that is openly, honestly gay, and also with the intent to try to write things that still relate to everyone, and also maybe provide a suggestion of positivity and healing, hopefully, where people can listen to it and actually feel like their spirit's been elevated. So I guess there's a little bit of that preacher boy still in me, because I still have that desire to kind of touch people on a spiritual level or an emotional level at some point.
But I've seen that hate is not the answer. There's a time when we all must decide step on up with wisdom and power, and say, children, let's give up the fight.
Exodus didn't manage to cure his homosexuality, but still, Levi Kreis's musical career could have been very different.
I had signed a Christian record deal. The story goes that I was in my dorm room at my college, and there was a fellow there who had seen me fervently studying like these 3 different translations of the Bible and a Strong's Concordance. And I was beginning, you know, as I told you, Steve, just starting to try to think for myself and really begin to see how I interpret, without anyone's suggestion of interpreting, what I believe, who God is, or what the Bible might say about all this. And he just, in continuous inquiry about what on earth I could be studying, I finally broke down and told my roommate that I was dealing with the issue of homosexuality. So he went to the Baptist Student Union of the college and told them. they went to the board of directors of the college, and I was kicked out of college. And an intern at my label happened to go to the same college and told the label, and I had lost the Christian record deal. They dropped me.
After years of bouncing from label to label and attempts to repackage him as everything from Christian rocker to boy band heartthrob, Levi Christ decided to release his first album last fall under his own Likas Picas logo. The album, called One of the Ones, is not only critically acclaimed, but it's his official coming out recording.
Too many nights I fed from the ruin of manic pursuits that left nothing to gain. In desolate bars, drowning in whiskey, black rooms with boys that don't have a name. At some point we all want the same, to live and let go of the pain. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes, I wanna know love.
Lyrically, Levi is intimate, almost confessional. But given his conservative Christian roots, can lyrics about boys in back rooms and drowning in whiskey be autobiographical?
Extremely autobiographical. I think coming from a fundamentalist background, it's not uncommon for one to act out another extreme after being forced into a certain extreme growing up. And so when I first moved to LA, I did what any, like, you know, 21-year-old would do, where you just kind of go out and you just have experiences. You know, I had never even kissed a guy until I was 20. So I kind of got rowdy like any young 20-something does. And, you know, the whole writing of Love in Another Light, which is the song you're referring to, was kind of the moment back then when I realized, well, this is all well and good, but it's kind of like just jumping through the same hoops with nothing really left to take home at the end of the night that means anything. And with that being a part of my desire now, I just kind of am patiently waiting for something of substance these days.
This has been a conversation with singer-songwriter Levi Christ. For more info on Levi, visit his website at levichrist.com. That's LEVIKREIS. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Look what you made of me for being maniacal, certifiable. It's comical. When I'm looking back, I see you made of me. Made a man out of me. No, no.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 5KIX Kangaroo Island, South Australia, WOJX Northampton, Massachusetts, Radio Free Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.